Greetings and welcome to our weekly Parsha podcast. My name is Yitzhak Et Shalom, and this week's Parasha is Parashat Toldot, the story of Yitzhak. Parashat Toldot is a central series of stories in Sefer Bereshit, in the book of Genesis. As my son Yossi pointed out to me this week, and I had not yet noticed, it is the only Parasha in which all three of the patriarchs are alive. Even though Avraham's death is recorded at the end of Chaye Sarah, at the beginning of chapter 25, and therefore is not mentioned directly in Parsha Toldot, a simple look at the chronology gives us Avraham alive at least into the beginning of Parsha Toldot. Of course, Yitzchak is central in Parsha Toldot, and the birth of Yaakov and Yaakov's everything that happens to Yaakov until he has to leave home, which happens at the end of our parsha, is also recorded in Toldot. So it is a very central parsha, and as such, we're going to launch this inaugural. We're going to launch the series of Parsha podcasts with this inaugural shiur, looking not at a specific detail in Parsha Toldot, but rather at the entire piece, at the entire parsha. And a quick scope of the parsha shows that there are really three major segments in the parsha. There's the first segment, well known, the marriage of Yitzchak to Rivka, the barrenness, Yitzchak's prayers, Rivka being blessed with twins, her confusion, the prophecy given to her about the fact that there are twins and that they will be struggling with each other, the birth of Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov and Esav growing up their different ways, and that famous scene with the sale of the primogeniture by Esav to Yaakov when Esav requested or demanded the bowl of porridge or lentils, to which he then took an oath that he would sell the bechorah. That is, if you will, Act 1 with several scenes. The next piece, which is chapter 26, or at least chapter 26 until the last two psukim, is the story of Yitzchak. And indeed, within the context of Sefer Bereshit, this is the only chapter and the only series of narratives or linked narratives in which Yitzchak is really in the spotlight. It focuses on Yitzchak. Yitzchak is not a foil as he is in the Avraham stories. Yitzchak is not the foil as he is in the Yaakov Esav stories, but rather Yitzchak is the central player. And in that series of narratives or of sub-narratives, Yitzchak attempts to follow his father's footsteps and to go down to Egypt at the time of a famine. God stops him and has him stay in the land of the Plishtim in Gerar. There is another wife-sister incident. There is then Yitzchak settling in and then having confrontations with the Plishtim as he becomes more wealthy and as they challenge him and threaten his livelihood by filling in the wells that his father had dug, concluding with a successful detente with Avimelech, the king of Gerar, in the town of Beersheba. The town of Beersheba is again named Beersheba because of the oath taken between Yitzchak and Avimelech. And that leaves us in Beersheba. The end of chapter 26 includes something that looks like a footnote, which is that Esav was now 40 years old, and he married, just like his father married at 40, and he married local women, and they were bitter, they were a source of bitterness and sadness or disappointment to his parents Yitzchak and Rivka. Okay, and then we get to chapter 27, the longest passage in Parsha Toldot, which tells us the story of Yitzchak's impending death, or at least as he saw it, due to his blindness, his calling Esav to go hunt and bring him some venison so that he can give him a blessing, Rivka overhearing it, Rivka having Yaakov come in the guise of Esav with food prepared in the guise of venison in order to get Yitzchak to give Yaakov the blessing, Yaakov leaving, and then Esav coming in and finding out that someone has come in and stolen his blessing, realizing it was Yaakov, swearing he would kill him, Rivka overhearing that again, and Rivka then directing Yaakov to run away to her brother Lavan, and then Rivka convincing Yitzchak that Yaakov has to go to Lavan to find a wife, because if he marries a girl like Esav did, she has no reason to live. Yitzchak then turns and blesses Yaakov and sends him on his way to marry a family member, his cousin Rachel, and Esav, and this is an important footnote in the Parsha, Esav sees that the local girls were a source of disappointment and sadness to his parents, and as a result, he also marries from the family a daughter of Ishmael. And that takes us to the end of the Parsha. That's the entire Parsha Toldot, in the three-minute Toldot, if you will. However, there is one significant problem in the entire flow of the Parsha, the sequencing of the Parsha, and I'll point that out in a minute. But I want to start with asking a question about the first Pasuk in the next Parsha. The first Pasuk in the next Parsha, Vayitze, is Vayitze Yaakov in Be'er Sheva Vayelech Charana. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva to go to Haran. And Mefarshim, both ancient and modern, have all commented on the seemingly superfluous phrasing of leaving Be'er Sheva. It's obvious that Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, and indeed, why do we care where he left from? Because the main point is that Yaakov went up to Haran in South Turkey or North Syria in order to find the family member and to find a wife from there, and as his mother privately told him, to get away from the clutches and the threat of his brother Esav. So why the mention of Be'er Sheva? And that is, of course, because following the chronology, as I pointed out, following the sequence of the stories, after the Yitzchak narratives conclude at the end, near the end of chapter 26, Yitzchak is in Be'er Sheva. So clearly everything that goes on from there happens in Be'er Sheva. Yitzchak is old and blind in Be'er Sheva. Yaakov and Esav maneuver against each other, or shall we say Rivka and Yaakov maneuver against Esav in order to get the bracha in Be'er Sheva. And so clearly when Yitzchak sends Yaakov away, he's sending him from Be'er Sheva. So why make that mention? Oh, we'll come back to that, but I want to point out what is a much larger question in the chronology of the text. The entire chapter 26, or at least till the last two psukim, which are focused on Yitzchak and Yitzchak's sojourns, which parenthetically imitate some of the major steps that took place in his father's life, Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holidit Yitzchak, and that is the famine going down to Egypt, the wife's sister incident, the interactions with the plishtim, the brit or shvuah with Avimelech, and my friend and relative Rav Amnon Bazak at Yeshivat Har Etzion wrote a wonderful article in which he demonstrated that indeed Yitzchak in every one of those steps improved on Avraham's actions and took each one of them to a greater degree of success and a greater degree of desirability as far as the outcome goes. But that's an aside. But if we look at that chapter, something very strange comes to the fore. For example, in the second scene in that chapter, when Yitzchak is asked who Rivka is, and he says she's my sister, and Avimelech believes that she's a sister. Unlike Avraham with Sarah, she never is taken away. But Avimelech then discovers that Yitzchak and Rivka are married because he sees Yitzchak mitzachek. Parenthetically, that is the same phrase used to describe what Ishmael was doing and caused Sarah's alarm and to have him ejected from the household. And in both cases, it's a play on the name. It's a midrash shem on the name Yitzchak. Yishmael was mitzachek, and now Yitzchak mitzachek at Rivka Yishto. But it's very clear from the context that whatever Yitzchak and Rivka were doing together was the sort of thing that only a husband and wife would do, not a brother and a sister. And the sense of it, although this cannot be proven because we don't have another example of the use of that phrase, but the sense of it is something akin to youthful ardor in the relationship. However, at this point in time, Yitzchak and Rivka have been married for over 20 years, because they were married 20 years before they had children. Then they had children, twins, who grew up and have already gone their separate ways as far as their professions. Esav has become a successful hunter. Yaakov has become a successful Yoshev Ohalim, which according to Pshat means a shepherd. There is the Midrash about Yoshev Ohalei Torah and Ohalei Shem Ve'ever, but nonetheless, he is Yoshev Ohalim, and they've gone their separate ways in their livelihood. And it's difficult to assume that they are anything less than 15, 20 years old at this time, which means that Yitzchak and Rivka have been married now for upwards of 40 years. To describe a couple that's been married that long as mitzachek doesn't seem to fit with the way that we understand that word or that scene. But greater than that is, how would Yitzchak possibly have passed Rivka off as his sister if they've been married for that long, and more critically, if they have two children in tow, two grown children? Now, the Ramban addresses this point, and he claims that Yitzchak passed the children off, Yaakov and Esav, as someone else's children, perhaps children that he had in tow, they were his wards, and that's how he would explain their presence. We will return to why Ramban would feel the need to make that statement, but in the meantime, there's another problem in this parsha. Even if we can get around the presence of Yaakov and Esav, or the lack, the presence of Yaakov and Esav within the believability, as it were, of Yitzchak and Rivka being a brother and sister, and that is as follows. As we see in the parsha, although we may not like Esav very much, although not nearly as much as he is derided in the Midrash, it's quite clear that Esav has, as one of his stellar positive qualities, a great love, respect, and reverence for his father. And that's seen even in Esav, if you will, his worst moment, when he says concerning his brother, who he is very angry at, who has just cheated him out of his blessing, and he wants to kill him. He doesn't say, I'm going to kill him. He rather says, I'm going to wait until father is dead, and then I'll kill him. In other words, even in this moment of great anger and frustration, nonetheless, he has enough concern and love for his father that he's not willing to think about killing Yaakov while Yitzchak is alive, as it would hurt his father so much. So now we've got the following information. Esav is a loyal son to his father, Yitzchak. Esav is an accomplished hunter, an archer. Yitzchak, throughout chapter 26, especially the latter half, undergoes encounters with the Plishtim that are confrontational, that are clearly aggressive and violent, and nowhere is there Esav, if you will, hiding behind a tree, bow and arrow ready, shooting down and attacking his father's adversaries. And this omission is glaring, considering how much Yitzchak is really at risk and has to stand up for himself in this entire scene. So we have that as one question. It's a series of questions, really, which is, how do we possibly accommodate our reading of chapter 26 with Yaakov and Esav as already young grown men? How is Rivka passed off as a sister? Where is Esav in the interactions with Yitzchak, etc., in the interactions between Yitzchak and the Plishtim? So I'd like to propose the following, and it's something that, the truth to tell, not only the text begs it, but it's something that the Rishonim, in a particular context, bore out. Those who are interested are advised to take a look at the comments of the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban at the end of chapter 25 at the purchase of the Bechora, or the sale of the Bechora. The Ibn Ezra took the position that Yitzchak had lost his wealth. Of course, Avram was fabulously wealthy. Of course, Avraham bequeathed that wealth to Yitzchak, as the text says, but that at this particular point in time, when Esav came in from the field, he said, Lama zeli b'chora. The reason he said that was because there was nothing left. There wasn't much left to the estate. There was no point to a b'chora because you're not going to inherit much. And one of his proofs is the fact that when Yaakov goes away, according to his own testimony, he was sent away with just a walking stick and nothing else. And he came back with two camps. So Yitzchak had lost his wealth, and there was not much left in the home. Now, parenthetically, and it's very important parentheses, Ramban takes the Ibn Ezra on head-on, and there has a lengthy piece at the end of chapter 25, highly recommended, to note how they counter each other. And as a side note, it's interesting to read their biographies and see how much each one of their own personal biography approximated the way that they described Yitzchak. But that is a close to the parentheses. In the meantime, the Ibn Ezra notes, as an anticipated challenge to his approach, that in chapter 26, Yitzchak is described as being wealthy and wealthier and more powerful and more mighty with his wealth as he continues to be successful in the land of the Plishtim. How do we put that information together with the claim that Yitzchak had lost his wealth? And Ibn Ezra, as almost an aside, says perhaps that happened earlier. I'd like to take that little line of the Ibn Ezra, examine it, and take it much further in our understanding of chapter 26. But in order to do so, we have to ask a larger question about narrative in Tanakh. We generally assume that narrative in Tanakh is told in order. And that is for the most obvious of reasons, which is that a story has to be told in order because the later parts build upon the earlier parts. You can't tell the story of Yaakov before you tell the story of Abraham. And telling the story of Abraham before you tell the story of Noach leaves so many questions and makes so many things misunderstood or incomprehensible. However, there are certainly times in which the narrative in Tanakh does not go in strict chronological order. And that takes us to the famous dispute about Yesh Mukdam Muchar BaTorah or Ein Mukdam Muchar BaTorah. The loyal supporter of the position of Yesh Mukdam Muchar BaTorah, that the Torah is told in strict chronological order, except where impossible, and I'll give one example in a moment, is Ramban. Ramban maintains Yesh Mukdam Muchar BaTorah. Look at the first Ramban in Parshat Yitro. Look at the Ramban in Shmot Lamed Bet, where he discusses the chronology of the story of the Egel and of the Mishkan. As opposed to, for instance, the Ibn Ezra's take, in which the Ibn Ezra says the narrative, the chronological sequence is not at all true, meaning the sequence does not follow the chronological sequence of events in the Torah. Everybody will agree that generally stories are told in order. Even the Ibn Ezra has to agree to that. And everybody will agree, even the Ramban, that occasionally they're not. And the strongest counterexample, as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, is in the beginning of Parshat Sefer Bamidbar. The beginning of Sefer Bamidbar describes events that took place on the first day of the second month of the second year, what we would call Iyar. In chapter 9 of Bamidbar, we have Hashem talking to Moshe on the first day of, or at least in the first month of the second year, meaning a month earlier. And that's where the Pesach and Pesach Sheni are introduced. So clearly at that point, and that's the Sugi and Masachah Pesachim that deals with that, clearly at that point you have to say occasionally, Yesh Ma'in Mukdam Muchar BaTorah, occasionally the stories are told out of order. But every time they're told out of order, we have to have an explanation of why, meaning what overriding concern took them out of order. Well, within narrative, as opposed to the piece in Bamidbar, which although it is narrative, it is legal text, and therefore there's a particular legal flow to what's going on, as far as the Pesach goes. In the case of narrative, there are all sorts of other concerns. And one of the major considerations in the narrative in Tanakh, and it's not unique to Tanakh, but it's very prominent there, is the notion of finishing a particular story or following a particular character to the end, or at least the end of that segment of his life, and then going in and taking a look at where some of the other characters may have gone. And a classic example of this takes place in the comment that I mentioned at the beginning of the shiur about the presence of Avraham in our parsha. Because truth to tell, Avraham is 100 years old when Yitzchak is born. So, and Avraham dies at 175. So if Yitzchak is 40 years old when he meets Rivka, that means Avraham is at the wedding. If Yitzchak is 60 when Yaakov and Esav are born, that means Avraham is at the bris. Avraham is alive when they're born. And yet, Avraham dies at the end of Parshat Chayisara, and only now do we hear about Yitzchak getting married, at least given an age, and only now do we learn about the birth of his kids, even though Avraham's already gone, they were born while Avraham was alive. Why is that the case? Because the Tanakh is interested in telling us the story of Avraham and completing the story of Avraham. And it completes the story of Avraham and gives us his years and where he was buried and who buried him, etc. And then, note, the next thing it does, it tells us about Yishmael's life. And Yishmael dies. And Yishmael, by the way, died at 137, which means that Yitzchak at the time was 123. Yitzchak is well before 123 when the later events happen. And yet, the text wants to finish Avraham, finished. Now we finish the story of Yishmael, finished. Now let's tell the story of Yitzchak. So in other words, we're not following a strict chronology. We're following the sequence of the life of Abraham. That's completed. The last act that Abraham does that's significant is procuring a wife for Yitzchak. Then he's off the stage. So let's complete the story. Not leave him hanging, but complete the story. Yishmael's last act, even though it's relatively insignificant in the text, it becomes prominent later on in Midrash, is his attendance at the funeral of his father. When that's done, we have no more use for him, and therefore we run to the end of his life. Tell us about his kids, tell us how old he was, tell us where he was buried, etc., if relevant, and we're done. Now let's go to Yitzchak. Good. So if that's the case, then we can look at our parasha and revisit the issue of sequence and see what's the most reasonable sequence of events, chronologically speaking, within the three major stories in the parasha. The birth of Yaakov and Esav and their growing up and the sale of the primogeniture, the Yitzchak in Gerar sequence of events, and the theft of the bracha by Yaakov and his subsequent flight to Haran. I take a look at it, there's one answer that becomes quite obvious, and we just follow the lead of the Ibn Ezra, which is that the events in chapter 26 came before the birth of the children. So in other words, the way we would read it, and take a look at Parsha Toldot, is we'd read as follows, Ve'elot Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holid Yitzchak, Vahi Yitzchak ben Arba'im Shana b'kachtor Rivka, Abab Tuel, Achot Lavan, Armi, Lo Leisha. Right? Those two psukim. And at that point, jump to chapter 26. In other words, a lot of things happened during the 20 years that Yitzchak and Rivka were married, but were without children, and that includes the ability to move around, that includes the ability to present Rivka as a sister, that presents the opportunity for Yitzchak and Rivka to be seen sporting as a young couple, as it were, Yimitzachek, that also gives us the opportunity to explain at least why Yitzchak stands alone against the Plishtim and doesn't have a loyal, aggressive son of Esav to help defend him, and all of those events take place before Yitzchak and Rivka have children. Now, before we go any further, an issue about location. If I were to ask you where the Avot lived, well, it's a little bit difficult when you talk about Avraham because you could list many cities. You could talk about Shechem, you could talk about some place between Beit El and Ha'ai, you could talk about Hebron, you could talk about Mitzrayim. True. But the two locations that Avraham seems to be settled in at any point in his life are Hebron, Elonim Amre, and Be'er Sheva. Those seem to be the two places. Beginning from the middle of the Avraham story, when he finally begins to settle in, he is in Be'er Sheva when Ishmael is born, when Hagar goes out to meet Bar Be'er Sheva, and near Be'er Lacharoi, which is near Be'er Sheva, and that's where he seems to be at that point. And when the three people who turn out to be Malachim come to visit him, they visit him in Hebron. Now, there's something strange that happens in the text with Avraham, and all of Rishonim pick up on this at the beginning of Parshat Chayei Sarah, which is that when Sarah dies in Hebron, Avraham comes, lispod l'sarah v'livkota, to mourn her and to weep for her. As Rashi's approach to that is that Avraham was in Be'er Sheva, and that's where he had to come to Hebron when he heard that Sarah died. What was he doing in Be'er Sheva? He was on his way back. This is Rashi following Seder Olam chronology. He was on his way back from the Akedah, because indeed at the end of the Akedah, the text says that they returned to Be'er Sheva. But why is Sarah in Hebron? He's in Be'er Sheva. And in the meantime, we find something else. That when Avraham is in Be'er Sheva is when he's interacting with foreign potentates, for instance, with Avimelech. Yitzchak is in Be'er Sheva. Again, same thing. When does Yaakov go to Be'er Sheva? When he's on his way out of the country. Be'er Sheva is presented in Bereshit as the southern border. And indeed, in Gvulot Eretz Yisrael, it is the southernmost significant city. But it is the southern border of the land. It's the border that also abuts to the west with the Plishtim. So Be'er Sheva is not a place to raise a family. Be'er Sheva is a place to do the diplomatic and perhaps military interaction with others. Where does Avraham live once Yitzchak is born? As a matter of fact, even before he's born, and stays there. And where does the family stay? They stay in Hebron. Why Hebron versus Be'er Sheva? That's another shear. He stays in Hebron. Where does Yaakov return to when he comes back from Lavan, ultimately makes his way to Yitzchak in Hebron? Where does Yaakov live with his children? in Hebron, and it's from there that they ultimately descend to Egypt. So Hebron seems to be the family home when there is a family. Beersheba seems to be the way station when the patriarch is still on his own, or married but on their own, meaning without children, and they're still doing that international interaction, detente, challenge, treaty signing stage of their lives, which Avraham had, which Yitzchak had in chapter 26, and Yaakov had in a very different way, which was both on his way out of the country to Mitzrayim, and we'll see in a minute the first time that he left the country, again when he was all alone. But Yaakov, when he was all alone the first time, was before he was married. Yaakov, when he was sort of all alone the second time, was when his children were already grown and out of the house. Another form of being on your own, and again coming to Beersheba. That being the case, and now putting chapter 26 chronologically before the events of chapter 25, I'll point out where, we now have Yitzchak doing all of that interaction as a DINC, as we would call it, double income, as it were, no children. He and Rivka, no children. They interact throughout the Plishti land and end up in Beersheba. And then, when Yaakov and Esav are born, they are where, of course, we'd expect them to be, in Hebron. After all, Avraham's there. Doesn't Avraham want to have his grandchildren near him? They're going to be in Hebron. That's where they are. And they're in Hebron, then follow the text. The third pasuk in our parsha, which is Vayetar, Yitzchak davens for Rivka because they have no children. And Hashem responds and gives them children. This is when they're married for 20 years. This is after the events of chapter 26, except the last two psukim, and I'll pick that up in a minute. This is after all of the interaction with the Plishtim, and this is after they've done their Beersheba bit, and now they're in Hebron. And now the two children are born, and now they grow up, and now Yaakov becomes who he is, Esav becomes who he is, and now Yaakov gets the Bechorah from Esav. And now skip to the last two psukim in chapter 26. Esav grows up a little bit more. He's now 40 years old, and he imitates father, marrying at 40, but he marries a local girl, and this is a source of soreness for Yitzchak and Rivka. What's the very next statement? Yitzchak is now old. He thinks he's going to die. He wants to give his children a blessing. And where does this all take place? Of course it takes place in Hebron. And therefore, the entire scene takes place in Hebron, and at the end, when Yitzchak sends his son to Haran, he sends him from Hebron. So therefore, I'm surprised to find out that Yaakov went to Beersheba. It's not that the phrase Beersheba, the word Beersheba, in the first pasuk of Vayetze is extra, it's surprising. It should be Vayetze Yaakov mechevron vayelech Harana. Why does he leave from Beersheba? So we see already that the Avot had a particular spiritual connection to Beersheba. We see it later on when Yaakov leaves to go down to Mitzrayim. He stops in Beersheba to bring Korbanot. We find it in the Midrash that Avraham returned from the Akedah to Beersheba to daven there. For whatever reason, Beersheba, perhaps because of the Be'er, because of perhaps the successful interaction with Avimelech, was a place that the Avot considered to be holy, and a place that they wanted to go before leaving the country to, as it were, either bid farewell, bring a korban, ask reshut, however we understand it. So at the end of the story of Yaakov taking the bracha, and now having to flee for his life, and at his father's behest to go up to Haran to find a wife, he goes to Beersheba. And now we understand why the text has to say, Vayetze Yaakov Beersheba. He did not start in Hebron. He went down to Beersheba to daven, to say farewell, and went from there to Haran, which then leads to all those midrashim about the ladder that he saw in Beit El having its anchor in Beersheba, and the other side of it in Beit El, on the top of it over Makom HaMikdash. By reassessing the chronology of the events, suddenly things become much clearer. Now, the big question, why go out of order? Why not begin Parsha Toldot by telling me the story of Yitzchak and what happened the 20 years in Gerar and then have the children born? To that, there's a very simple answer. We've already had Toldot Ishmael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avraham that his kids would be numerous as the stars. And then he promised Avraham, when Sarah demanded that Ishmael be ejected from the house, that Yitzchak would be the main Zera. How can you tell me, Ela Todot Yishmael, and tell me about all of the chieftains that he has, and then have Yitzchak walking around for 20 years without children? In order to demonstrate, now Kodesh Baruch Hu's bracha of children comes true, the first thing we hear is about Todot Yitzchak, the children of Yitzchak, Yaakov and Esav. We're told about their birth, we're told about the first significant interaction in their lives that we care about, which is, of course, the sale of the Bechorah, and then we go back and fill in the story of Yitzchak on his own, and then at the end of Perek Chaf Vav, the last two psukim, pick up the story where we left off with Esav, a grown man, and everything goes from there. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.